We're back on the air here at WRFR, Low Power Community Radio, Rockland, Maine. And I want to thank my partner, the Camden Conference, for helping to bring the radio show on the air. And today's show is featuring a new CD that has just been released. So is this CD, can people buy it online now? Josh?
Yes.
Yes? Okay.
Yeah.
Good. So I'll put a link to that, Josh. So Ziggle Zaggle Music is your record label, is that correct?
Yeah, ZiggleZaggleMusic.com. And it can also be found at CD Baby.
Okay. So people, is that, like, can people download it too? Like,
Yeah.
You don't have to get a physical CD. I know a lot of people don't even have CD players anymore. It's kind of crazy.
No.
Well, we're going to start off the second hour. We're going to go into the first three cuts from the compositions of Paul Modian. And we're starting out with John Voight reading a quote from the Paul Modian songbook, Volume 1, and then One Time Out and Cathedral Song.
The trick is to know when to give it up and when to have patience and when to work things out.
Thank you.
cat you just heard. All right, why do I have feedback? Okay, you just heard John Voight quoting from the Palmodian songbook, and then One Time Out and Cathedral Song. And Josh is going to talk a little bit more about trios and inspiration, and then we're going to play another cut of his from a different album called Spark. So you want to say, what else did you want to say about the trio influence and trios without piano and trios where everyone is an equal?
Yeah. Well, I guess the trio that I did earlier when you played the tribute tune I wrote called Modian was another sort of unusual trio, because in that one we took the bass out. There was no bass. And that's pretty unusual in a jazz group, but it creates a lot of open space. And as a pianist, it's actually really nice for me because I can use the whole piano, you know. But Paul's spirit of you know, freedom and kind of equality and sort of deep listening, which, you know, you could look back to the Bill Evans Trio for some of that inspiration. And, of course, many jazz musicians developed that through the 60s and into the 70s. But then the trio that I was mentioning that had such a big influence on me in the Paul's first trio in the 70s brought things to a whole new level for my ears. And this next piece is called Sparks. It's actually a quintet piece with a more standard, somewhat standard jazz instrumentation. The difference here is that we have a cellist, a great cellist named Eugene Friesen, who plays in the Paul Winter Consort, among many other groups. And he's the fifth voice on this. And the other melody instrument is, again, Stan Strickland, who I work with quite a bit on woodwinds. He's on flute on this track. And the bass player on this track is Bruno Rayberg, a great bassist from Sweden. And the drummer is Mark Walker, who's an outstanding drummer, plays with the group Oregon, and among many other people. I was fortunate to have such a great group play this piece. Again, it was an old piece of mine. I wrote it in the 70s and didn't record it until a couple of years ago. The name of the album is called Sparks, and it's also available at ziggledzagglemusic.com, and it was released last fall. And anyway, what I wanted to mention about, to me, Paul's influence on this composition is in the composition is in 5-4, and it starts out kind of rubato free-ish and then goes into that 5-4 feeling. But then midway through, it becomes, I do a thing where the timing, it still stays in 5, but it's over the bar. And this is the kind of thing that I was directly influenced by Paul's playing in this middle section of this piece. And I could actually, as I was composing it, I heard his playing in my head. And it's a way of just hearing and feeling the beats in a very different kind of way.
Okay, yeah, sounds interesting. Okay, so this is the tune Sparks, composed by Josh Rosen.
Thank you.
Okay, we just heard Sparks from Josh Rosen's album of the same title. And that came out a few years ago. Is that what you said, Josh?
No, last fall.
Last fall. Oh, just pretty recently. Yeah, but it's a tune that you wrote in the late 70s.
Right.
Right, yeah. Okay, so now we're going to talk, John is going to talk a little bit about his experience, personal experiences with Paul Modian when he played with Lowell Davidson and him in the mid-70s, and we've got more music. So go ahead, John, tell us about Armenian story.
I can't lose that one, too. Oh, and you, Cindy, we pulled all of these songs from the songbooks that you published, but you're so sweet. You put in a plug there somewhere. I'll put in a plug.
Go ahead. You can do it.
Josh and I both bought these books independently from each other. We didn't. I left a Modian CD. It came with the flow, with the way these things happen. He came over to the house to play, and I said, "Oh man, we got to do some Paul Modian tunes. Check out this book." He said, "Oh, I got one too." I said, "Whoa!" You know, so much of this deals with camaraderie. So much of this deals with shared beliefs, shared loves, in a world, quite frankly, that seems to be concerned not so much with the aesthetic and beauty and spiritual and the things that all of us and I assume all of your listeners somehow or another share in, and that's quite a beautiful thing in the world, which I'll not talk anything more about. So music has its characters. There's always the people who didn't make it, the funny piano player in Des Moines who played like Cecil Taylor, but nobody ever knew about him, or this character or that character. For one reason or another, personal or family, or they decided to make a lot of money playing Broadway pit shows or whatever. There's always these legendary people. One of the intensely legendary people in the Boston area who played with Paul Modian was Lowell Skinner Davidson, almost 7 feet tall, black, from a bourgeois black family that were Pentecostal ministers, and his sister still is in the Church of the Holy Baptized Fire in Roxbury. Lowell got a scholarship to Harvard. I could go on forever and ever and ever. But at the end of his life, for various reasons, he was mad. He was in bad mental shape. But he would create small little pieces of composition. So, 1976, he gives me a phone call. He's living in his father and mother's abandoned church that apparently was owned by P.T. Barnum, complete with lions in front. Modian's coming up from New York to do a gig with us. Yeah, sure. Come over and rehearse. I go there. No Modian. Second time. No Modian. Yeah, sure. Third time. I'm going and going, yeah, this is not... And there's Paul Modian. I go, wow, you know, sweet guy. I hadn't done the gigs in New York yet. I mean, I'm old as dirt even then, but he was the first major heavy that I was playing in public with. And the thing that was astonishing about it, and I'm going to say the obvious, the thing that was astonishing, the better the player, the easier it is to play with, especially when you're creating new, difficult things that you've never done before, really highly creative kind of music. And I'm reflecting on working with him and doing the concert, which has the story too, was recorded, then the tape got lost in Manfred Eicher's place in Germany, lost it. Though it still may be out there somewhere. But in any case, the thing about Paul's playing is like playing with Josh now. It was impossible for me to do any wrong. And somehow or another, Paul seemed to... Josh knows where I'm going before I get there. But with Paul, he presented a whole rhythmic timbral universe that supported and enhanced and triggered me to play better before I got to it. And like I say, the better the player, the way it was so absolutely easy to play with it. Where am I going next, Josh? I get so enraptured with that. So playing, rehearsing in the church with Lowell Davidson and Paul Modian, somehow or another he burnt his finger on a candle, or Lowell liked to have candles burning all over the place. And he immediately put his finger back in the flame. And I'm looking at him, and Lowell's looking at him. What is this? No, that's an old Armenian way to fix a burn. So for any of the listeners out there, please don't do that.
Yeah, but did it work?
We're not insured. Paul with his Armenian root. Paul with his Armenian roots and all of that. And we're gonna reflect with that after the next composition. But that joy of playing with Paul and the other great players that I had a chance to borrow perhaps steal from. A couple of years ago, 2010. Joe Morris, the guitar player, Tom Plaschek, a close friend, trombone player, teaches at Berkeley, went to the Roulette Studios, theater space, and recorded some of Lowell Davidson's graphic scores. And I'm just so proud of the way I opened the CD. I'd like you to for all of us to humor me and listen to about a minute and a half of from the album MVP, Morris Boyd Plaschek, LSD, Lowell Skinner Davidson. And this is the opening of Blue Sky and Blotches.
Okay. We're going to play a little bit of that, and then we're going to go into Tentative Bipolar, an improvised tune from the music of Paul Modian.
Thank you.
Okay, you just heard a Tentative Bipolar from the music of Paul Modian, and that's an improvised tune by Josh Rosen and John Voigt. And before that, we heard just a few minutes of the opening cut on the MVP LSD CD with Joe Morris on guitar, John Voigt on bass, and Tom Plesic on trombone, Blue Sky and Blotches. And a solo bass opening there with John Voigt. And yeah, I really heard a connection between those two songs. And next up, we're going to play Victoria, which Josh and John recorded. And I was telling them that I was kind of thinking that the only time that came out was when Paul had it on his tribute album and that no one else has ever recorded it. But then I looked it up to check, and Keith Jarrett actually recorded it. But it wasn't originally released on the album Backhand, which is probably when they recorded it. But it was released on the box set, the Impulse box set of Keith Jarrett's. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Victoria and then Josh's. So Victoria was Paul's maternal aunt, and she was a survivor of the Armenian Genocide. She and Paul's mother were extremely close because they were held together basically as slaves in Turkey for about 10 years from their teen years into their mid-20s. Before they were able to escape in the 1920s. And so they were very close. And actually, so Victoria, whose Armenian name was Yevkina, and we called her Yevki Markor, which is aunt, and they lived in Massachusetts, in Wrentham. So, you know, the song 5 Miles to Wrentham is named for they used to always go visit on Sundays, and Paul writes about it a bit in his autobiography. But she was I knew her too. She didn't pass away until the early 1980s, and she was just such a happy person. She was always laughing and joking around, and I think Paul was a lot like her personality wise, and they got along really good. And Paul told me this story of and he also wrote about it in his autobiography about wow, when he first got married, he was telling Victoria or Yevki about it, and he said something like, "Well, I think my new wife might be a little crazy," and she said, "Oh, but you're a little crazy too, Paul, so that's good." They used to call him Crazy Paul, yeah.
That's good. So we got that. My opening of the LSD thing in the Tentative Bipolar. We have a nutty theme going here.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you want to say anything about it before we play it, Josh, about Victoria, about why you chose it maybe?
It's not nutty. That's one of the things.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. The way John and I would pick tunes is thanks to your publishing of the amazing compositions. We would take the book and just go through the tunes one by one, and when a tune appealed to us, John would pull out his librarian sticky notes of all colors.
Yeah, I used to be the librarian at Berkeley. But we loved all the tunes. It was which ones can we do justice to? Which can
which
can really, we not destroy?
Which felt really good to us and close to us, and this one we felt very close to. And I think you'll hear it.
Yeah, the aunt spirit is coming. Came across from the printed page.
Okay, so here, let's give a listen to Victoria. Thank you.
playing the music is real, physically and whole, then it's gone. But it's still there in the air, in the mind. It exists. It's not part of technology. It's not recorded. It's part of the soul. It's there.
Okay, that was Sunset with Susan. And Josh, you wrote that song for your wife?
Yeah. Well, actually, in a way, it's another one of John's titles after hearing it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So that
one. But he did mention his wife, you know, he mentioned his son. His mother had, I don't know, he was thinking about Sue and Sunset or something. I said, wait a minute, Josh, he didn't have a title for the song. I said, you remember Crepuscule with Nellie, Monk's wife? Aha! But Susan.
Yeah.
He fought it for a while. Oh, gee, I don't know. I got my way. And Susan liked it. She liked it.
She liked it? Oh, that's good. Yeah.
The important thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Seriously.
So I want to remind everyone that you can check out jazzcloset.blogspot.com to get links to podcasts. And I was mentioning to Josh, if you really liked the Charles Brackeen, David Isenson trio with Paul, that I have a rehearsal tapes and some really fantastic duo rehearsal tapes of just Charles Brackeen and Paul Modian. And there's some good chatter on there, and they're like laughing back and forth. And if you Google Charles Brackeen on my website, those podcasts will come up. And I'm not sure what I'm doing for a show next week, but it will be something. And I want to thank Josh and John for taking the time to come on the show. And
thank you, Cindy.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, we've got a couple more minutes to do some talking, and we're going to go to the top of the hour with a tune called American Waltz. And so that's one you wrote, Josh, right?
Yeah, that's from an album called American Waltz that I think I put out in 08. And if anyone's interested, once again, they could check the website, ziggledzagglemusic.com. And the reason I thought it would be nice to include this was another one of Paul's groups. I mean, he always had amazing groups. And one of them that had a big influence on me was when he had worked with Bill Frisell. And this track, American Waltz, features the great guitarist Mick Goodrick. Now, Mick was, I think, one of Bill's teachers at Berkeley, but also Mick played quite a bit with Paul and Charlie Hayden back in the day, and it seemed to make sense.
Yeah, they had the American Jazz Quartet. I've actually been exploring that on the last couple, maybe two or three shows ago. Paul had all these tapes of concerts in Europe, and I looked it up, and they toured, you know, a bit, like for a year or two with Charlie Hayden. And Dewey
and
Redmond.
And Mick and Dewey.
There's a great photos of them. And I met Mick once when Paul played with him in Boston. It must have been like maybe in the late 90s, mid to late 90s. So this album is, you were the leader then? It was your compositions?
Yeah, it was my composition. The band was called Three Play Plus. It started as a trio, but then we added the plus is the great trumpet player, Phil Grenadier. And the other players are Lello Molinari on bass and Marcello Pelletieri on drums.
So is that related to Larry Grenadier?
Yeah, that's Phil is Larry's older brother.
Oh, I didn't know he had an older brother. Interesting.
Yeah, and they grew up playing together all the time in San Francisco area, in the Bay Area. A very musical family. His father was a trumpet player, and his other brother is a guitarist who's not that well-known. But Phil has become quite well-known in Boston. He's in the Boston area, plays pretty much every night out about.
Oh, club. Great. Yeah. Okay. So thank you guys again. You want to say goodbye?
And we'll try.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
But I'm not going to hang up on you yet, though. Okay. So here's the tune.
Bye to everyone else.
American Waltz.